Welcome to Maximum Resilience with me, Kelly Bizzani, as we go on this epic journey of how to own your power and the steps to take that lead you towards an incredible life of maximum resilience. This educational, powerful, engaging, and inspiring show will levitate your mind, strengthen your emotional resilience, and revolutionize the approach that ensures mental health as we consciously address a worldwide epidemic. Wisdom is key. Let's shift the paradigm embodying mental and emotional wellness. We do recover. Experience the transformation from victim to victor, giving rise to living your best life. Here's the secret: to learn how to master unleashing your full potential every day in every way. Maximum resilience starts now.
Everybody, welcome to Maximum Resilience with me, Kelly Bizzani. Oh my goodness, happy March. Today I have the privilege and honor of being with Jim Britt. And this is an especially just powerful episode for me because I'm truly humbled. I was honored to be asked to co-author with Jim in the Change Book series, which is the fastest growing personal development book in the world. I have to look down at my notes because Jim is just so infamous that I had to bullet point for him all of his accolades. I get to be mentored by him too. And so when I was speaking with him on the phone, I discovered he lives and resides in Grass Valley, which is where I got clean and sober. So this is an emotional podcast for me as well. With that being said, I had an instant soul connection with him, and on our phone calls together, I'm just absorbing his wisdom like a sponge. It's always been my dream to open a second resilience in Grass Valley, and that has come to fruition with two amazing souls, Becca Hood and Anastasia Knight. And what a perfect show to have Jim here to celebrate that with me today. So hold on tight, because this is the first show where I'm literally going to read his bio and praise his name because of his commitment and dedication to his vision and purpose that is so in alignment with mine. It would take a full hour just to get through it, so here we go. Jim Britt is an award-winning author of 15 best-selling books, 8 number one international bestsellers, including Rings of Truth, Do This, Get Rich for Entrepreneurs, Unleashing Your Authentic Power, The Power of Letting Go, Cracking the Rich Code series. This is my favorite: directing the movies in your subconscious mind, and The Entrepreneur. He is internationally recognized as a business and life strategist who is highly sought after as a keynote speaker, both online and live for all audiences. As an entrepreneur, Jim has launched 28 successful business ventures. He has served as a success strategist to over 300 corporations worldwide. He was named as one of the world's top 50 speakers and top 20 success coaches. He was presented with the Best of the Best award out of the top 100 contributors of all time to the direct selling industry. In the past 44 years, he has presented seminars throughout the world, sharing these success strategies and life-enhancing realizations with over 5,000 audiences, totaling over 2 million people from all walks of life. Early in his speaking career, he was business partners with the late Jim Rohn for 8 years, where Tony Robbins worked under Jim's direction for the first few years in the speaking business. Can I keep going? Okay, I will. As a performance strategist, Jim leverages his skills and experiences as one of the leading experts in peak performance, entrepreneurship, and personal empowerment to produce stellar results. He is pleased to work with anyone seeking to remove the blocks that stop their success in any area of their life. Today's show, Jim is going to share with us how he does that. And I am just couldn't be more pleased and honored to have him with us. So, Jim, welcome to Maximum Resilience.
Oh, thank you. Thanks so much. I'm looking forward to it.
My goodness. I can't even believe it. I'm a little starstruck, really. I really am. I mean, this has been my dream and honor to have people like you just implement this wisdom for me, because I want to be like you when I grow up. So I just want to hop right into this because I want everybody to hear what you have to share with us. And so today, the title of our show is The Power of Love Matters and the 6 Strategies Needed to Have Success in Your Life. And so we're going to start with segment 1 of what are the common blocks you see when you're working with people before we get into those 6 traits? Because when we're looking at this, Jim, like, let's set it up. Before we can talk about these traits, we need to look at what is standing in people's way and what are people really kind of ignoring that's causing them to suffer, not emotional pain that's inevitable, but the suffering that's optional for people.
Well, Kelly, you know, everybody has blind spots that they can't see. And we all heard the term, the 80-20 rule. You know, people produce 80% of the results or in sales and that type of thing. Well, it's also true throughout life that probably, I don't know if 80% is exactly right, but the majority of people don't fully follow through with what they say they're going to do. And they don't know why, because maybe they come to an event and they get all the information they're looking for. They're all excited about it. They go home and, you know, a few days later, they kind of, you know, dwindled back down to sinking into their old life and forgetting about what they just learned until maybe they have some pain again, emotional, and they want to go back and look for something else that's going to bring them up to that point again. So what I did about 35 years ago, I started looking at what causes people to not follow through. And it took me a whole day. I'll give you a few minute version of it. But I just finished an event. There was about 1,000 people in that event. And we had people from all over the country, all over the world, actually, are people coming in. And I think back then they paid maybe $1,500 for it plus their expenses. So they probably spent $2,000, $2,500 to be there. And so the next week I was sitting out by my pool, just kind of relaxing and enjoying the day and thinking about the event. I read some of the evaluations. All of them were raving reviews. And then it dawned on me that 80-20 rule popped in my head. And I thought, boy, if that's true, 800 people out of 1,000 are not going to follow through. And that kind of bothered me. So I thought, well, is it something I'm not doing? And I thought, well, the evaluations say I'm doing the right things. They were all raving reviews. So the more I thought about it, I thought, well, you know, what makes us different? We get programmed differently. You know, I mean, some basic things we all program the same, but our parents program us to start with how to walk and talk and, you know, how to count, and how to say your ABCs and how to swim and how to ride a bicycle and things like that. That's pretty basic. But we also pick up other habit patterns as we're going along, other programs, and we probably have hundreds of them, you know, and they become second nature to us. And we don't even realize we're even doing them, really. I mean, you go out to the pool and you go to jump in. You don't stop and go, wait a minute, can I still swim?
Yes.
No, you just jump in. Can I still drive a car? No, you just get in and go. For some people, they need a few lessons, but but so the more I thought about that, I thought, well, that's a difference. You know, we have different habit patterns we've developed and they become second nature to us. And I thought, well, how do you access those habits? And I thought, well, they're really right on the surface of your subconscious mind because you don't have to think about them. You just access them as you need them. The more I thought about that, I thought, well, if you look at our past, that's what brought us where we are today. Well, how do you remember that past? And the reality is you really don't. You don't remember all of it. You remember highlights of it. Mm. You know, you remember the beautiful things that's happened in your life. Maybe, you know, your first date or your first kiss or you got your driver's license or you went on a beautiful vacation, that type of thing. You remember those things. And I thought, well, those must be just under the surface of your subconscious, right below those habit patterns, because you can access them and reminisce about them and talk about them pretty easily. And everything else is kind of like in today's world, files on your hard drive. Mm. Then the next moment, though, really changed everything for me. And it was a discovery I made back then, 35 years ago. I thought, well, wait a minute. We also all have negative experiences.
Yes.
Some are pretty traumatic. Some are pretty simple, but yet maybe repeated input for, you know, through our childhood. You know, we all have programs that we've developed, and they have become second nature to us. For example, let's say that somebody has a, you know, maybe their parents are fighting all the time, and they're a young child. Well, the essence of a child is love and sparkly, and they want to be happy. And when they hear their parents fighting all the time, it hurts them.
Mm.
And then if their name comes up in that argument, they take it personally.
Oh, shit. Mm-hmm.
They think that argument was about them.
Mm.
And if those parents get divorced later, they blame themselves for the divorce. Now, they may not consciously do that, but unconsciously they suppress that.
Yes.
And over years, this has multiple tentacles that go out. And it affects every area of our life. And the more we suppress it, the stronger it becomes. It becomes like an addictive cycle, just like being addicted to a drug.
Mm-hmm.
We're addicted to who we believe we are.
Mm-hmm.
And that influences our life. Because what you believe is what you're going to see. If you believe life is tough, you're going to see a tough life. If you believe life is lonely, you're going to be presented with many opportunities to be lonely.
Yes.
If you believe it's abusive, you're going to be presented with a lot of opportunities to get abused. So that's just the way life is. In reality, all beliefs are false.
Yes.
Until you decide they're true. And then they're only true for you.
Yes.
So, and you can change them. So,
that's it.
You know, that was a discovery I made, that people have that hidden belief system that they don't know they have. So how do you fight that? How do you overcome that when you don't know what you're fighting?
When you take it on as an identity.
Well, you do. And we all have it to one degree or another based upon our programming. I mean, you look at somebody that's a multi-billionaire and you go, well, they got the life. Well, I'll guarantee you they got places in their life that they're lacking.
Yes.
Everybody does to some degree. Nobody's perfect. So so what I realized then, two things that I had to do. I had to develop, number one, how do you help somebody discover something they don't know they have, that belief system? And that took me about 6 months to figure that one out. And secondly, how to take the emotional charge off of that emotional experience away from it, so it becomes like a file on your hard drive instead of being in your face on your desktop all day long.
Yeah.
So that's how we develop that hidden belief anyway.
I love it. I love it because when I was researching you, you know, because before this, I always stalk your page and stalk everybody else and the people you've worked with. You need to have a desire to change, is what you always talk about. Mm-hmm. And so to bring it to their conscious awareness, make them aware of it, and then have a desire to change. So from what you talk about with me, you look at them holistically. You look at their backgrounds, how it evolved for them before you can let them see that there's a desire to change. So you've worked with all different types of people from all different walks of life, from mega millionaires to all different industries to people. And what you are seeing is that it's all the same theme for them. And it's just being expressed in different ways.
Yeah, there's really only about six problems in the whole world. And we think ours is unique, but there's another million or so people that have ours.
Yes,
so,
that's it. We think it's unique to us. And so when I see the same thing in my, no, it's just happening to me. And I always say to them, well, who's telling you that? Well, I am. Yes, just you are. You're telling it to yourself. So to get them to uncover it, you know, I always think of Johari's window. You know, if I have spinach in my teeth, Jim, I don't know I have spinach in my teeth until you tell me I have spinach in my teeth, right?
Right.
So I want to get into, you know, what are the six traits that are needed to accomplish it? because when I was looking at your YouTubes and stuff, it's decision, right? Decision determines how you show up to the world. So you have to make, or not you have to, you get to make a decision about how you determine how you show up to the world. But first, you've got to be aware of it. So I want to know your wisdom about what are the misconceptions about getting to from point A to point B that you discovered when you were doing this work?
Well, some of the misconceptions are that I think everybody has a desire to change, pretty much. I mean, I'm talking generally, but, you know, you can ask 1,000 people on any street corner in anywhere and ask them if they'd like to make more money, and probably 100% would say yes.
Yes.
Even the ones that are mega millionaires, they'd still say yes.
Yes.
So I think people have that desire to change, but it's not enough. It doesn't take you anywhere.
Right.
And I think people, they have a desire to change. I'm talking about myself too. When I first started, in the process, you start setting goals and you want this or you want that, you want a new boat or you want to make money or you want, you know, whatever it is, you're setting a goal to have. And then you can do a vision board. And I had a vision board before it was even called a vision board. You know, I had a book with a best-selling cover on it that I'd created, number one bestseller. I had, you know, I had a boat. I had a car. I had all of these things on my vision board. And you know what? None of them ever came true. And because if you don't go to the next step, all of that is just a lot of mental gymnastics, in my opinion, that's not going to take you anywhere.
Yes.
You have to take it to the decision. People have to decide what they want in their life. Now, indecision is also a decision.
Yes.
It's a decision to stay right where you are.
That's it.
But making a decision, let's look at it like a complete circle. And when most people make a decision, they leave just a little opening someplace in that circle. And that's their escape route. That's their excuse, just in case it didn't happen.
Yes.
So, but that decision has to be so firm that it doesn't allow for anything less. And I'll tell you a story about how I got started. You know, where I came from. I grew up picking cotton in Oklahoma when I at 6 years old is when I started. I picked cotton until I was about 12. And it was hard work, really, really hard, hot, backbreaking, hard work. And we got paid back then 2 cents a pound. And cotton doesn't weigh very much. So it was a lot of picking for nothing. Of course, things didn't cost as much either. But I learned from that. I learned that hard work doesn't necessarily get you ahead in life. It's okay. You should work hard, but hard work may not get you where you want to go.
Yep.
And then, you know, as I progressed or I digressed, one or the other, I dropped out of high school in the 10th grade. And then I went to work pumping gas. I got married shortly after that. I had my first child at 19 years old. And then I got my dream job, which was working in a factory on the assembly line. I thought I died, gone to heaven.
Yeah.
And then I found out like 6 weeks into it wasn't really heaven at all. It was boring work. But I worked there for a few years. And then I got introduced to a business, a direct sales company. And my first venture in any kind cost me $4,000 to get started. I had $9 in the bank. That was it. And I went to 23 banks and loan companies to get the money. That's how determined I was.
Yep.
And I finally got it. I think it might have been a 50% interest rate. I don't even know.
Time.
I didn't care. I just wanted the $4,000 to get started. And my training was, your job is talking to people. If you talk a little, you learn a little. If you talk a lot, you learn a lot.
Mm-hmm.
That was my training.
Wow.
I said, how much is a lot? He said, 10 a day. I said, okay. And we didn't have computers and all that kind of stuff either. So I went out every day and I talked to 10 people a day for a year. And the way I tracked that was I carried 10 beans in my pocket when I left the house every morning. And every time I talked to somebody, I'd flip a bean away. So that was my tracking system. And at the end of the year, I had one customer.
Wow.
That was it. 3,650 plus people told me no, except for one. Standing a year later, standing in my kitchen going, what am I going to do? What am I going to do? My home is in foreclosure. Actually, it had already been foreclosed. I had a notice from the sheriff. It had to be out in 5 days. Both of my vehicles had been repoed. All of my furniture had been taken. I had a wife and a child, and I had 15 cents in my pocket. And that was it. And I thought, well, maybe I'll just go back to the factory. And I thought, I don't even have a car to get there. But then 15 seconds later, I'm going, nope, I'm not going to give up. I'm going to make this work.
Grit.
So, I mean, I'd made a decision that didn't allow for turning back. And you may think, well, that was crazy. How could you continue? So I picked up a 5-gallon container of carpet shampoo, which weighs quite a bit. And I walked 3 miles in the Oklahoma heat to the one customer I had that bought 5 gallons about 6 months earlier, hoping that he would buy 5 gallons. That was my only objective. And he did. And while I was there, he called me into his office, he and his brother. And he said, we've got something we'd like to talk to you about. Now, I worked for this guy during the summer in high school. Like in the 9th grade, we built a home in school. So I kind of understood the trades. And I worked around his construction sites during the summer and after school and things, picking up things and maybe repairing a few things here and there. I saved him a lot of money catching things that contractors had done wrong, basically. And when I came in, he offered, I mean, long story short, it won't take a lot of time, but basically they offered me a chance. They wanted to try something different, to build an apartment complex, 52 units of apartments.
Wow. Yep.
And they said, we want you to run the whole thing. And he said, at 52 units, and we're going to give you $300 a week salary, which my mind already said yes.
Yes.
I needed money.
Already made up your mind. Yes.
We're going to give you a vehicle to drive and the expenses for that. And if you want it, we'll give you a 3-bedroom furnished apartment. So what else did I need? I had money coming in. I had a vehicle to drive. I had a furnished apartment and didn't have anything to move, really. A few little items. And I moved into the apartment. The biggest problem I had is I'd never built anything like this. But I said yes.
Yes.
And my gut's just going in knots when I said yes, because I'm going, how do I do this? I don't even know where to start. But they gave me a year to build it. And if I built it in a year, I got a $60,000 bonus. And they said it normally would take about 14, 15 months to build it. But a year, you get this bonus. And every day you go past a year, you lose $1,000 a day. Every day you finish before a year, you gain $1,000 a day. Well, I built it in 8 months.
Yep. And you made another decision. You made another commitment and decision to do it.
So, I ended up with a little bit of ownership in the property. And but long story short, I'd made almost $500,000 that from that opportunity. From one customer that I sold. So people say, yeah, but what happened to the 3,649 people that didn't buy? Well, it doesn't matter.
Not
one that bought. And then I get back home and the guy from the direct sales company, that one of the executives knocks on my door not more than 2 hours later. And he said, I understand you're a hard worker, but you're not making any money. Can we talk? And we sat actually in my floor for 2 hours and he taught me what I was doing wrong and what I needed to be doing. And my direct sales business took off like a rocket and earned me almost $500,000 that next 12 months. So I went from 15 cents to almost millionaire within a year because I would not give up, because I made a decision that was firm enough that it wouldn't allow me to turn back. I mean, maybe I did it out of stupidity, maybe inspiration, maybe desperation. I don't know. But I look back on it. That was a great year, actually. Not while I was going through it, but it was one of my best years. learning experience anyway. So if you're going to decide to do something, it determines how you show up to the world. And it also determines how those people in the world show up to support you, because a decision creates a mindset. Yes. And you're walking around like a beacon, whatever that mindset is. If it's personal or business, or you're down on yourself or lack of confidence, all of that is being projected out to people. And if you make a half-hearted decision, that's being projected out. Nobody wants to support a half-hearted decision.
No.
So that's number two.
Jim, I just, first of all, that is incredible. And thank you for sharing that. And when I hear so many things, my mind is like, while you're talking, because desperation can lead to inspiration, but it takes perspiration, like you just mm-hmm. said. It requires mm-hmm. hard work. I also think of the success cycle while you're talking. When I ask people, you know, when it's belief, potential, action, and results, and I ask people, well, what does it take to get success? They're like, action, action. I'm like, no, belief. Mm-hmm. If you don't believe, if your belief system is, I'm not good enough, I'm going to fail, I'm going to, then you're not going to access your full potential to take the action to get the results. You know, I always say to my clients, you know, excuses are not going to get, you know, when I lost all my excuses, I found my results. You're like, I believe that I can do this. I'm going to make a decision. Our friend Jim Rohn, discipline is the bridge between goals and accomplishment. You are disciplined. You made a decision. You stuck with that, throwing out the beans. Okay, I'm going to commit to this for this time. I don't know. It might be crazy, but the ones that think they're crazy enough to do it, do. And you made it. And there we are. You know, so I'm hearing so many things throughout your story that I'm like, it's just.
Well, you know, this, you mentioned beliefs. If you look at the word belief, and I said earlier, it's something you've decided is true, whether it's true or not. It is true for you.
Yes.
But the definition of a belief is to have an opinion. Now, everybody's got opinions. But if you take it to the next step, to knowing.
Yes.
The definition of knowing is to be certain.
Certain.
So when you make a decision, it's got to be based on, I know I'm going to do this.
I know. And getting those results ahead of time in your mind. And
exactly.
So I always say, people, I'll be happy when I want. I'm like, change it to you already are. I want to be healthy. I am healthy. And the next step, action step to get you there. Which,
and want and lack have the same definition.
Yes. Yes. And so I'm so excited. We're going to take a very, very short break. But, you know, motivation, when I hear I'm not motivated, it's not a motivation problem. And we're going to talk about that when we come back. But our friend Jim Rohn all says motivation is what gets you started, but habit is what keeps you going. So like you say, we need to look at the programming and the habit formation. So when we come back, we're going to take a very short break. Me and Jim Britt will be back. We're going to talk about continue with the six traits needed and go into the power of love. So we'll be right back. And Jim, real quick before we come back, if people want to get a hold of you, what can you give them your website, please?
Yeah, it's jimbritt.com. That's B-R-I-T-T, jimbritt.com.
And I'm www.myresiliencecoach.com. And we will be back real quick. Thank you.
To unleash the power of your infinite soul? Join Sherry Collins as she helps you remember who you once were by releasing your past traumas and stepping forward into your true self, living a life that you love. The show shares messages of hope, faith, and understanding. You can be the creative change that you want in your life. Soul Matrix Show airs every Monday, 3 p.m. Pacific, 6 p.m. Eastern on TransformationTalkRadio.com.
A quick tip from Jason and Patricia at the Ecosystem Approach Show. This is a way to improve your long-term relationships. As you go through life with your partner, the hurts, resentments, and conflicts are energies that build up. Your relationship holds on to these energies, and the relationship feels dull, boring, and unattractive. The love you felt originally starts to break down.
Do this. Say to yourself, I direct all my resources in all dimensions to eliminate. Name a hurt or resentment that you've had recently. Maybe it's something you're angry about. Take a breath and blow the hurt, anger, resentment into the processor shown behind us. Keep doing it.
If you want to hear about this topic, go to our website, theecosystemapproach.org, and under the radio tab, search for Long-Term Marriage, How to Excel Over Time.
Listen to all of our shows because we teach you how to apply energy techniques for everyday life in ways that are practical and useful.
See you Monday at 1 p.m. Pacific or find us at theecosystemapproach.org.
Are you a badass with big dreams? Then you need to join Confident AF Live, taking your mindset next level to get next year's results today. With me, Brandon Foster. Tune in every Wednesday, 12 p.m. Pacific, 3 p.m. Eastern on TransformationTalkRadio.com. I will help you crack open the door to new ways of thinking and believing about yourself with mindset practices for badass people like yourself. For more information, visit BrandonRFoster.com.
Welcome back, everybody. This is Maximum Resilience with me, Kelly Bazzani, and I have the absolute pleasure of having Jim Britt with me. So we are talking about the power of love matters, the six traits needed to accomplish what you want in life. Jim was just telling us the incredible story of his decision making that led him to where he is today. So Jim, we are right in the middle of the six traits needed. So what are we going to add to these viewers today to make them go like they already are right now?
Well, in addition to desire and making the firm decision, the next step is you got to take action. And so many people I see today, they're always getting ready. You know, I can't quite do it just yet, but I've got to have my website up, or I've got to have a business card, or I've got to have this or that. Look at whatever you're going to accomplish and ask yourself, what can I do right now today that's going to move me closer to that? I'm not saying you don't have to have your website or whatever it is that promotes your business, but what can you do today? Because if you put it off, if you put off a lot of it, you'll end up not doing it, or you'll end up doing it and it not working for you. So you got to take action. And most people, they're afraid to take action.
Yeah.
Because they're afraid they're going to fail. But, you know, when you look at fear, it's an interesting thing. All fears are false. None of them are true. I mean, not one of them. I had somebody challenge me one day, and they said, well, how about if you're being chased by a bear or a lion through the woods? Isn't that real fear? And I'm going, nope, it's not. You're making it up in your mind. What's going to happen when that bear catches you? Well, maybe it's going to lick you. I don't know. I mean, I'd probably run too.
But still,
we make it up in our minds, you know? So fear is a made-up story. And so many people experience that because they're afraid they're not going to get results. Mm-hmm. And that's where the decision comes in too, because you've got to see yourself there. You've got to feel and see yourself in a place you want to land. You've got to experience that in order to have it. Because we all have a frequency that we put out to the world. And people feel that. I mean, you've been with people before where maybe you've even made the comment, boy, I don't like that person's vibes.
That's it. I'm very energetically connected. And Jim, wouldn't you agree too? As a recovering perfectionist myself, the biggest breakthroughs I've had on a personal level and in my businesses came from failures. If I didn't try things and fail at them, I wouldn't know then what to do better and receive feedback on to launch myself onto bigger and better ventures.
Well, failure... Failings, I would say, are just a part of getting where you want to go, because
absolutely,
you're always going to hit roadblocks.
Yes.
It's just a matter of where you let those roadblocks stop you, or you go around them or go through them.
How do you deal with disappointment? Does it set you back, or does it motivate you to move forward with action?
Well, what happens with action is the fourth step that comes up. And this is a critical one.
Yes.
In order to become somebody different, in order to, you know, have a different a level of income or whatever it is you're striving for, you have to become somebody different. If you're if you want to lose 100 pounds, you've got to become somebody different to lose that. Otherwise, you're going to keep doing what you've always done.
Yes.
So it's so critical to when you to understand that there's pain involved. There's discipline involved, but the pain involved, we always weigh out the pain. Let's take somebody that wanted to lose 100 pounds or any weight. And they've said, okay, I'm going to go on a diet or I'm going to do this. I'm going to lose weight. And then consciously and some mostly unconsciously, though, they're weighing out the pain of changing of the discipline it's going to take to lose the weight or the pain of keeping it on. And so I can still sit on the sofa with the remote and eat potato chips.
Yes.
Which one's the most painful? Well, yes. Changing is the most painful.
Yes.
But you've got to get to the point where before changing becomes critical, you know, in some people's lives.
Yeah.
You've got to look at the end result.
Yes.
But you've got to step out of your comfort zone. And when you step out, you're going to be faced with obstacles. You're going to be faced with the with things that you have to change. And you've got to be willing to move forward and make those changes.
Even listening to your story, Jim, everything that you did that led you up to where you are in that story, you just was uncomfortable. It was really uncomfortable. And so when I work with people, you know, they're like, well, it's like, okay, you might be thinking it's uncomfortable to stay where you're at, but it's actually uncomfortable rather than getting uncomfortable and leading a life that's comfortable. So you've got to get out of that square that you're in. That's an illusion of control that you think you have and the certainty and everything, which is your content. Like you say, the story you're telling yourself about your beliefs, and get out of that box and put it into context, which is actually the facts of what's really happening, like you're saying, right?
Yeah, yeah, for sure. Because, you know, if I think back to my greatest fear, my greatest discomfort. And when I was a business partner with Jim Rohn, you know, my job was promoting him. And that led to me doing more speaking and more speaking. And because I was in the speaking business, but I didn't think that was going to happen. I thought I was just going to promote him and that was it.
Yeah.
But all of a sudden I'm doing workshops, I'm doing keynotes, I'm doing all. And I remember the first time I got up and introduced Jim Rohn, we had 1,000 people in a sellout crowd. And I'd memorized what I was going to say. And I stood up and it was like I went blind. I could barely see the audience.
Yes.
The light was fine in there. It wasn't a dark room. It was like everybody was blurry. And as I'm talking, it sounded like the words were coming from outside me through into my ears, not from inside me. It was the most terrifying experience I think I've ever had.
I can't even imagine.
And then the first time I did a talk was even worse. I mean, it was only 20 minutes. And afterwards, I went out to the car and I thought, okay, I'll never put myself in that position again to feel that way. Then I thought, well, you got one of two choices. You either do it often till you get better at it, or you don't do it anymore.
Yes.
Which occurred to me. But I thought about it for a while and I'm going, nope, you know what? I'm going to do it. And I'm going to do it until I get better at it. And I made that decision and I went back and I put the word out to all of the salespeople we had, which was about 300 of them. I put it out over the next 30 days or so that I would do any presentation to sell tickets to events for 50 people or more, up to 3 a day.
Very specific.
And I did.
Yeah.
I mean, all of a sudden they're booking me everywhere.
Oh.
So that put me in front of every possible type of situation that you could ever put yourself in. I spoke to the Garage Mechanics Association, and there I didn't know there they're meeting in a garage, all sitting on buckets.
Love it.
In their greasy clothes. And I'm dressed in a three-piece suit, white shirt. And I'm going, okay, I'm a little out of place here. And I talked to the Unwed Mothers Association. I thought it was single moms. They were single moms, but they were 14 years old.
And oh,
it was in a gymnasium, and they're all around the room. They're not down here close. And I'm going, what? How am I going to handle this? And so I go down and I say, okay, everybody come over. We're going to get in a circle here, grab a chair. But it was like, what am I going to do now? And then the next was a corporate meeting, and it had the men, mostly men, and their spouses or their wives, or the wives and their husbands and their kids all in the same room. I'm going, okay, now I got to relate to the executive, their spouse, and their kids all in one shot. Yeah. So it taught me a lot. I mean, it was uncomfortable and it taught me a lot, but I'll never forget when all the discomfort went away. And it never came back. So I don't get uncomfortable anymore, because I realized two things. When you step on stage, and this applies to anything that's uncomfortable to you, or pretty much anything that's not working in your life as well. Number one, you want, as a speaker, you want to control the audience. Number two, you want to get approval from them.
Yes.
Here's the problem. When you need control, you're out of control.
Yes.
When you need approval, you don't get it.
Oh, yes.
If you're seeking approval,
yes.
It's like, I need approval.
I'm guilty of that. I'm guilty of that. Yep.
You have to let go of the need for control if you want to be in control. Because the only thing you can control is you, not anybody else. So you want to control yourself, and you have to let go of the need for approval.
Yep.
And when you do that, you're truly coming from yourself, and people are warm and welcoming to you.
Yeah.
So look at those two needs. If you find something that's not working in your life, ask yourself, is this stemming from my need for approval or control? You'll be shocked.
I love that. You know, when you're talking about fear, I just got my first paid speaking engagement, and I sat with the contract, and I sat with it, and I sat with it, and I did all the work around it. And finally, my aunt was like, have you sent that contract to the school? Because it was fear. And I remember my master life coach when we was taking the self-mastery classes, and she's like, all right, I'm going to give you the solution for fear. Are you ready? She's like, hold your breath. And all of us were just like dummies holding our, she's like, okay, keep holding. And we're all sitting there. She's watching her watch, and our faces are turning blue because we just wanted the solution. And so finally, after 2 minutes, people are blowing out. People can't breathe. We're sweating. She goes, there is no solution. The only way around it is through. And we all just start laughing, you know, because my mantra now, you know, when I'm doing a speaking or a podcast or anything else like that, is have no fear when the mission to serve is clear, because it's not about me. You know, my story is it's about me, but it's not for me. Like you said, I'm not in control, you know? And so when I make it about what my mission is or my purpose is, or who I'm serving, I flow. But when I'm like, oh my God, is my hair okay? Or am I going to reach who I'm supposed to reach? Or when I make it about me, it's that illusion of control, like you said, then that's when I'm nervous or freeze or, you know, yeah, so thank you for that. Cause that's so important.
My first mentor, I only saw him one time. And he taught me a couple of things. He asked me one day, he said, so how do you know if you have a viable prospect? I said, I don't know. He said, obviously you don't, because I'd got a year and made one sale. And he said, you have to arrive at three destinations. He said, do they have a pain or a problem? Do they want to solve it? And can you solve it? He said, if they have a pain and they don't want to solve it, you don't have a prospect. Or if they don't have a pain, you don't have a prospect. Or they're not willing to share it with you, you don't have one. And I said, well, how do you know if they have a pain or a problem? He said, that's a good question. And he says, it's not out there flapping your jaws like you've been doing for a year. He said, you got to ask questions and listen. And he said, you got to be truly interested in what they're saying. Listen and ask questions. And I said, well, what kind of questions? He said, it doesn't matter. Which kind of confused me. But he said, just start a conversation. He said, if you're at a wedding and you meet somebody new, what would you say? Hi, how are you? What brings you to the wedding? Are you a friend of the bride or the groom? You started a conversation.
Yes.
And they'll say,
more interested than interesting.
Yeah. And he said, just keep asking questions. And, you know, I mean, don't be obnoxious about it, but get to know the person.
Yeah.
And ask them what they do. Do they love their job? Do they, you know, if they could do anything they wanted to do in life, what would it be? I mean, you can get all kinds of questions, but what will uncover is a person will, if they trust you, they will share their pain with you.
Yes.
They will share whatever it is. And you just got to get good at asking questions and listening. It's so critical in life. And he left me with one thing. The last thing I remember he told me, he said, if you live your life this way, he said, what I'm going to tell you, he said, it you'll never lack for money. He said, you'll never lack for friends. And one day you'll build a network worldwide.
Yes.
And I couldn't wait for him to tell me what it was. And he said, every time you meet a person, it doesn't matter who it is, where it is. It could be a prospect. It could be somebody you met on an airplane, at church, at a wedding, or wherever. He said, always be thinking, what can I do to help this person?
Yes.
And he said, the only way to know what you can do to help them is to ask questions and listen and get to know the person. And that is so critical. And I've lived my life that way since that day. And it's so true. You know,
well, it doesn't
have to be about money.
That's
not, you know, it's about helping.
Well, that comes as a byproduct.
Yeah.
You know, everybody thinks the goal of life is happiness, you know, but what happens when you live your life in the way that you live it, and it proves by when I read your accolades, is happiness, money, success comes as a byproduct of that. Because like we're talking about energetically, when you start to change, then the people around you start to change. And that you say this on your podcast and your YouTubes that I've watched. When you change, either the people change around you or they leave, you know, and you manifest new to you. Because when your need for approval, it accommodates other people's need to control you or things like that. So when you start changing things inside of you,
right,
and that leads us into our next segment, because I want to get into it, because time goes so fast with you. It's so precious. There's who you are, who you pretend to be, and who do you want people to think you are. But when you live the life in the way that you're exampling right now for us, you get to be the same person in private, in public, and like this. It takes way less energy expenditure. And so I want to talk about this, the power of love, because you talk about a different kind of love. And there's an attached kind of love. But you talk about love being a kind of energy like this, a feeling. And I just want to use the last couple of minutes for you to talk about this with us, because it's so important, and it kind of goes off of what you were just speaking about.
It was a major discovery that I made many, many years ago. And you're right, there's two forms of love. One is the attached form of love. I love chocolate. I love my boat. I love you. I love my car, that type of thing. And all of those are in a sense temporary, but it's still an attached form of love. There's nothing wrong with it. I mean, it's better than hating it, you know, so,
right.
But I was, a friend of mine, we used to get in conversations about books we'd read. We'd read the same book, actually, and then call each other and talk about it and kind of learn from each other's perspective. And we had just finished doing that one day. And then right at the end of our conversation, he asked me, he says, Jim, what do you think the word resourceful means? And I said, I don't know. I guess maybe using your imagination or being more productive, I guess. I said, I don't know. Never really thought about it. He said, oh, it's just an interesting word. And we hung up right after that. And so later I'm driving home and I couldn't get the word out of my head. Resourceful. What does that mean? I mean, I just kept repeating over and over and over. I was like obsessed with it. And back then we didn't have Google or, you know, any way to look it up online. So I went to my dictionary. Oh, I mean, as soon as I got home, opened the dictionary and looked up the word resourceful. And the definition was once again full of source.
Wow.
And I went, wow, that's pretty powerful. Once again, full of source, depending on what you think source means. And then I thought, well, I'll look up the keyword, which is source. So I looked that up, and the definition was where all things originate. Mm. Not some things, but all things originate in source. Again, what do you think source is? So I thought that was pretty cool. And I contemplated that for a long time, and I kept looking for another definition of source. Every time I'd go into a bookstore, I'd look in a different dictionary or an origin of words or different things, you know, looking for it. And one day I was in England in a small town called Chester. And as I was walking down the sidewalk, I looked at the back door of a building there, and it had a little sign that said antique bookstore. And I'm always kind of intrigued with antique books, older books, you know, it's kind of cool to read. So I opened the back door, walked in. First thing I see was a dictionary about a foot thick. And it was all tattered and torn on the outside. And I didn't know how old it was. I wish I had to look to see, but it did have a sign on it that said, do not open, please. And I thought that was for people in the UK, not for me. So I carefully opened it, but I was prepared to buy it if I destroyed it in some way. I think, I don't know what it would have gone for. It might've been $50,000 or something, but it wasn't in a cage or anything. So I opened it up to the S's and I looked up the word source. And I saw some of the same definitions and examples of using it and all this stuff. And then all of a sudden, one definition just popped out on the page. And it said source, love. Mm. Wow. Once again, full of love. And I thought, well, how do you apply that to your life? What does that mean? If all things originate in love, then your only other option is fear. But so you basically, when you make a firm decision to do something, doesn't matter what it is, you fall in love with that.
Yes.
Because that's where that is going to originate. Yes. You fall in love with accomplishing that, whether it's, you know, building your body or losing weight or making money or starting a business or having a better relationship. You fall in love with it.
In love.
And your only other option is fear.
Yes.
So I thought, wow, that is powerful. And then the more I thought about it, I thought, wait a minute. Where does fear come from if all things originate in love? I thought that's a flaw in this whole scenario. Mm. And I thought about it for a couple more minutes. And I went, oh, fear. We fall in love with fear.
Yes.
We actually fall in love with fear.
We sure do.
It's our ability, our free will. It's our ability to create. And we decide we're going to create fear instead of love.
We sure do.
And, you know, you fall in love with something you think you fell in love with. You've made that decision, but you leave that little opening. That's the fear.
Yes.
And it infiltrates and destroys what you thought you fell in love with.
Yes.
So love is where all things originate.
Yes.
So what I would say for people is that once you've decided firmly what it is you want in your life, then become an observer, a self-observer. And that's different than being aware. Awareness can tell you you've got a problem. It doesn't give you a solution. And you don't even see yourself in the problem. You're just consumed by it. So self-observation is when you, let's say you're always an angry person, but you don't like it, but you just keep doing it. So catch yourself moment to moment and stop and back away and observe yourself being angry. You're not in it anymore. You're observing yourself, or observe yourself being depressed, or observe yourself focused on anxiety or feeling anxious.
Yes.
And I guarantee you, it'll go away.
Like,
because you disconnected.
You disconnect. Step outside of yourself. And like you said, fall in love with the process.
Yep.
Everybody's so wanting the result, the result, the result. Fall in love with the process. Step outside yourself and observe. And thank you for that. That was so beautiful, because you're right. You know, I love your definition of love. And to end today, I found this beautiful, you know, because I love, well, I love you. I mean, I can't love you anymore, but, you know, I found this beautiful thing, you know, speaking of you working with Jim, that I said, success is steady progress towards one goal, and your personal philosophy is the greatest determining factor in how your life works out. Your personal, not anybody else's, to your point, not anybody else's validation outside yourself. We can be less than we have the capacity to be. We can earn less. We can be less. We can read less, try less, discipline ourselves less. And this leads to an empty life and we worry more. Or we can do it all. We have a choice, right? We can become all we possibly can. We can read every book, earn as much as we can, give and share as much as we possibly can, strive and produce and accomplish as much as we possibly can. So there's to do or not to do, or be or not to be. Like a tree, it would be a worthy challenge to stretch upward and outward to the full measure of our capabilities. Why not do all you can, every moment you can, the best you can? Not perfect, the best you can, for as long as you can. We get one life. Why aren't we running like we're on fire in the direction of our dreams? You've heard from the brilliant Jim Britt today. He has given you nuggets of treasure. So please, you know, listen to what is being said here. And thank you for joining us. Jim, real quick, do you have any words of wisdom? We've got a couple seconds here before we exit.
Yeah. And, you know, people are always searching. They're searching for answers to their problems. And they're so available to us. In fact, you can look at any object and discover the answer to your problems. You can look at a tree. You can look at, you know, the room that you're in. You can look at still water or rough water. You can open a page to any book or any magazine. Pick up any magazine, doesn't matter what it is, and go to a page and look on that page, and you're going to find the solution to the problem that you're going through right now. I guarantee it. If you just look, it's just like you can see a tree. A tree is sturdy and strong, but it also flows in the wind.
Yes.
And life is that way. You've got to flow with it. So, you know, it might be a word that pops out off of the page that does it for you. Just like that word that popped out to me, source, love. Yeah. So the answers are everywhere. But first you have to make a decision. Otherwise, the answers stay hidden because they don't know what to bring to you because you haven't decided to have it yet.
Yes. Thank you, Jim. So ask yourselves today, what decision are you going to make for yourself to lead a more abundant life? So Jim Britt, everybody, thank you. Love and abundance, love and light always. And we will see you next time.
Thank you for listening to Maximum Resilience with me, Kelly Bazzani, your ally for addiction. Tune in the first Monday of each month at 11 a.m. Pacific, 2 p.m. Eastern on transformationtalkradio.com. Engage in this epic journey of how to own your power and the steps to take that lead you towards an incredible life of maximum resilience. We do recover. Experience the transformation from addiction to living your best life. For more information about Maximum Resilience and me, Kelly Bazzani, visit myresiliencecoach.com. That's myresiliencecoach.com.
The views expressed on this program are those of the host, guests, and callers, and do not necessarily reflect the views of the station, its management, or advertisers. You're listening to Transformation Talk Radio.